Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And welcome once again, everybody, to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and we've got a really good show headed your way. So get comfortable. You're going to enjoy this one. We'll talk about what's happening in golf, both in Texas for the PGA Tour and in Florida coming up for the LIV Golf Tour. That's another week away or so, but they'll be playing, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We also have an exclusive interview with former U.S. Open champion and Hall of Fame golfer Tom Kite. Talk about the Players, and I talked to him because he did win the Players back in 89, and we talked to him a little bit about that as the Players was taking place, but also about golf in general and how it's evolved from his days and the glory days of the 70s, 80s, and 90s when he was kind of in his prime. So we'll hear from Tom Kite coming up in just a little bit as well. And anything else that kind of hits our fancy, and that means Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios, who might have some irreverent thing to bring up like he likes to do every now and then. How you doing, Frank?
No,
how's Nashville today?
I don't do that. Nashville's great. It's going to be beautiful. Yeah. I want to get this show on the road so I can go play golf. But hey, oh, by sorry. The way, talking about Tom Kite in 1989, that was the first big tournament he won. Remember, yes. He was in 89, and I asked him because I happened to have been, I was a hole captain on number 15.
Oh, okay.
At the Players. I lived there at the time. And I asked him after the tournament, he'd come into the volunteer tent where he had a big party and all that, and he came to thank everybody. And I said, so do you think the Players should be a major? At that time, it was called the TPC.
Yeah.
I said, think TPC ought to be a major? He said, it is to me.
Sure it is.
Because it was the biggest purse, too.
He had that moniker forever, right? He was the best to never win a major.
Exactly.
For years and years and years that he kind of had to live with, which is part of the interview I had with him. He talked about that yeah, he kind of wanted to get that monkey off his back. Somebody's always got that label, the Ricky Fowlers,
yeah,
and whoever are great golfers and seem to always be close. But yeah. And you look back and you're like, God, I would have sworn that guy had a major. And you're like, no, they've never won a major.
Well, so
he was
we
that
talk,
guy for a long time.
When you interviewed him, the Players was just getting underway. So some of the interview.
We were in the middle of it. Yeah. It was. I think we were on Friday of the Players, maybe is when it was. Yeah.
But it's still a good interview, and that's why we want our listeners to
well, and he talks about, and he talks about Tiger and Tiger's health issues. And I played yesterday, and I played with a friend of mine who's happens to be the CEO of Troy Aikman's Beer Company, which is a Texas-Oklahoma beer company.
Well, what's the name of it?
At some point, it'll expand. 8 Beer, which is, of course, his number with the Cowboys, but 8 Beer.
Yeah.
And it's and Troy's a really health conscious, extremely health conscious guy. And so it's a very healthy alternative because they have no additives and adjuncts, as they like to call them. So there's no syrups and sugars and all these things in there. It's basically water and barley and hops. I think there's like three ingredients that make 8 Beer. And so he's very organic, and that's what matters to him. So I played with him yesterday, the CEO, not Troy, but the CEO of the company. And he was, talking about golf and Tiger Woods, and we just got into that. And he's like, do you realize, and he was watching, I think there's a documentary that might be out now that I think Tom Selleck voiced over, but it's about golf, but also I think talks a lot about Tiger, how everybody just, we go back 20 years, we just all knew that Tiger was going to win 25 majors. I mean, he was just on such a tear and through the early 90s, and every year he was winning one or two. And every year he'd win 7 tournaments on tour. I mean, he was just that dominant. And to see that he hit the skids like he did, it's kind of mind-boggling. And Tom Kite talked about, that the guy's body just broke down. And maybe nobody did blame but himself, but it just, he couldn't. And obviously we see him now with his Achilles injury again, having more surgery and more issues with that he just is never going to fulfill. I think, despite the fact that people might call him the greatest golfer of all time, because he certainly had the talent and the abilities that very few people would ever recognize or succeed the way he did. But he doesn't have the numbers, right? If people want to say, you're going, he doesn't have the majors. He doesn't have, Jack still has more. So it's hard. He's won. And by the way, he's also stuck on the number, isn't he, with Sam Snead?
Yes.
They're both at 82.
Yeah, 82.
Which, I think that would have been something he would love to have done, right, is have the most wins anybody's ever had. And you can't imagine, can you imagine, Frank, anybody breaking, if you got to 83 or 4, anybody getting 84 tournament wins? It would never happen.
Yeah.
In two lifetimes. I mean, I can't imagine anybody ever, because Rory now is at, what, 28, I think? And Rory's had, obviously, a phenomenal career, but we see that Rory isn't winning five times a year, right? Scotty's on a great tear right now. We'll see where he ends up. But and Rory still doesn't even have 30, much less 80-something. I can't imagine somebody winning that many tournaments.
That's a lot. Anyway, but it's a great interview, and let's not give too much of it away because there's some good stuff in it.
About.
But we'll bring you that after the break and let you hear Tim talk to Tom Kite when he cornered him in Dallas a while back.
So speaking of Scotty, it seems like these guys, are playing. It's the PGA Tour at the Texas Children's Hospital at Memorial Park in Houston.
Yes.
A lot of big names. It seems like Houston's kind of gone back and forth with attracting big names to get kind of prepared for the Masters. And other years, not really having some of the big name guys who wanted to be at Augusta right now to practice or somewhere else and work on with their coach or something. And they're kind of back to having Rory and Scheffler and Spieth and Ricky's there, a lot of big name guys.
Yeah, I'm wondering, they've changed it up. You know, it used to be out at the Woodlands in Houston, and they moved it around some. Shell used to be the big sponsor. But Memorial Park is public, and they went in several years ago with a corporate partner and redid this golf course. I think it was in I can't remember the year, darn it, that they redid it. But I don't have my notes in front of me here.
But recently.
And it's like they're playing it. It's a par 70, almost 7,500 yards.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a Masters style, you know, lengthwise. But it's really a great layout and a great golf course. They've done a good job with it. I've played that course a lot over the years with friends in my younger years. I was visiting Houston or in Houston for a while.
Because you lived in Houston for a couple years, right?
A couple of years in Houston, My company sent me out there to
Now, when you say Houston, Frank, you actually mean Huntsville, right, when you're in prison? Is that what you mean? But you just
No. They dropped those charges. No, those charges were dropped.
Let's just call it what it is, Frank. It was a couple of those white-collar crimes that you did.
Houston. No, it wasn't white-collar.
You got caught a little. That's okay. Handed
a
cookie jar.
I was supposed to know she... Never mind.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, we can't go there. But I loved Houston. It's a great place, and that was in the oil boom days. And I was working for a company at the time, 3M, and they got rid of a lot of their people. I was in Memphis. They transferred me to Houston and gave me the major oil companies as my accounts. And all they did was just place orders every day for microfilm equipment. That's when microfilm was huge. So I just sat back and played golf about 3 days a week and with oil company executives and. It was a blast. I'd play at River Oaks, which you don't get on River Oaks. It's like Augusta National.
Yeah.
I had a blast out in Houston. Anyway, played champions. Mr. Burke was alive and kicking there, and Elkington was a member there in those years. Yep. He was playing on tour.
Still is, isn't he?
He's still a member of champions. Yeah,
he's kind of Jackie Burke now. Is he taking his spot on the bar?
No, nobody sits in that seat. Nobody.
They actually have a plaque. Yes, as you know, they have a plaque. Right there where Jackie would sit and kind of honoring him with his seat at the bar.
They do.
Kind of cool.
But it's going to be a fun tournament. The next week is in San Antonio, and that used to be kind of the real warm-up for the Masters. But a lot of guys are using this one so they can get the kinks out and then not go to San Antonio. So we'll see what happens.
It's a different philosophy, right, for a lot of these guys of how they want to get ready for it. Some want to play their way into Augusta. Others want to work on things, right, and go talk to their coach and their instructors, whatever, short game, long, whatever it might be. And I don't think there is a formula that seems to work. It's everybody's choice to figure out how they want to do it and get ready for it. And Scottie Scheffler is going to be the prohibitive favorite again, like I think he is for every tournament. But Rory is certainly
– Rory's hot right now.
Roaring back, isn't he?
Yes,
he's kind of making some noise like, okay, I'm not going to just concede like a lot of people – going back to Tiger, a lot of people kind of, old Ernie Els, were all playing for second place. I think a lot of people in the last couple of years have almost conceded, okay, well, Scotty's playing, so we're all kind of playing for second place. And while that seems to be somewhat true, I think Rory's going, I'm not going to give into that, right? I want to, and I think that's great. There needs to be the Tiger Phil. There needs to be Jack and Arnie. There needs to be Scotty, Rory, if you will, whoever could be the guys, those rivalries, and it doesn't just have to be two guys, but a handful of guys, those rivalries make golf. They really do.
Yeah, they do.
Know? And you've got to have the Tom Watsons and Lee Trevino and guys that are thrown in there with the great golfers that'll make you kind of go, okay, these guys have a legitimate chance and they're major winners. We know that they can come through, and it's not just a theory. And Rory's proven that, you know, he can turn it on when he needs to, and he's playing extremely well.
Yeah, he is. By the way, Tom Doak did the renovation in 2019.
Okay.
It's a great layout.
You're talking about at Memorial.
At Memorial. Yeah. No, not at Augusta National. No.
So now I mentioned that the LIV Tour gets back on track April 4th, right? And we're doing this show before that, obviously. And so that's the Doral going down to Trump National, Doral, and playing there. And Trump's been a big part of, or at least somewhat of a part of the negotiations, right? Trying to get LIV and PGA, and everybody's talked like, and this is what's funny, Frank, and you've had your corporate conversations with people in your past careers. It's sometimes everything's going, and here we go. Republicans, Democrats, we're going to redo this.
And then
it kind of goes, okay. Yeah. And then you fade away and you're going, didn't Tiger just say, and I say just, like in February, wasn't he talking about how close they are and we're going to get it done? And you're like, and then it just kind of fades away into the wind.
Well, the Justice Department's got to back out of it.
Well, and I think that's part of Trump's.
And that's part of Trump's involvement. Deal. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also part
President
of Trump's deal
Trump,
is,
I should say.
Yes. Is that he likes having his courses being played. And right now it's LIV. And if you remember, there was a taint that went to him for a lot of the, you know, woke people, I think, at the time, saying, okay, well, we don't want any Trump courses on PGA. And so they backed out of PGA events and all. And I think the president wants and likes, you know, we all know he's got a bit of an ego. He likes having Trump golf courses being played for majors and big tournaments. And I think that's his interest, too.
And he has the money to make that golf course as good as any in the world. So, yeah, and he does.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, Doral, really. When I went down for the LIV tournament several years ago, you know, I called you and said, oh, man, this is... I'm in heaven down here. This is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the LIV tournaments are exciting. I will tell you.
Yeah.
It's just fun to go. And there's some really good golf. I mean, really good golf being played.
Extremely good. And to that end, I think is why, and again, I was talking to a couple of my friends yesterday playing golf. You know, where do you think this is? And we were all talking about it. Where it is that the PGA Tour and LIV both know that both sides need each other. Now, they don't need the bottom half of the field, whether it's PGA or LIV. The guys that we don't really hear much about or don't even know that much about. But both of them, the PGA Tour needs John Rahm, right? It needs DeChambeau. The LIV Tour needs Scotty and Rory and Jordan and Justin. They need each other. They do. All of them playing against. And that's where I hope and we all think that the compromise will come in. And they're like, okay, what is it going to take? We need to – because the fans, us, get very frustrated when you watch this week's tournament and you don't get to see – John Rahm. I love watching John. I love watching him play.
Well,
I like his passion. I
guess
like
what?
Work. And you want to be able to see those things.
They're going to get to see him in 2 weeks.
Yes. But that's the thing. You
with
don't
the
want
Masters.
It to be just the
no,
rarity,
no.
right? I mean, I want to see Bryson, you know, drive 400-yard par fours, you know, or at least try. You know, you want to see that stuff. And so, you know, we all hope that that's where it finally gets. By the way, the Houston Open, the Texas Children's Houston Open, it's already underway as we are doing the podcast now. So, no big names, but guys are already on the leaderboard and playing well. Birdieing a couple of Andrew Novak, birdied the first two holes. That's the way to get started. I'm always interested when these guys play in these tournaments to see how they get started and then they miss the cut, right? It's like the guy's 6-under through 9 holes and then somehow 2 days he misses it. And you're like, how did it fall apart? But it does.
Here's what bugs
it happens
me
all the time.
Here's what bugs me about all these. The field includes 20 of the top 50 players in the official world golf ranking, right?
Yeah.
Well, who cares about the official world golf ranking? Because they're leaving a bunch of people out.
They are now.
That needs to be fixed, period.
Well, it needs to be revamped, and that was part of what the PGA Tour held tight, which was their control over that, right?
Yes.
Saying, okay, you LIV guys will never be on the world rankings, and they're blah, blah, blah. Here's where well, as it softened, and everybody kind of got, okay, we got to get, they realized, okay, we got to somehow figure out a way for these guys to get
well. The Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and all that's going to just
and majors.
Nothing.
I mean, the PGA Championship. The PGA Championship wants DeChambeau and Rahm and Patrick Reed and Dustin John. They want those guys, and they got to figure out a way. How do we make this work? Because it doesn't help anybody for us to beat. Now, I don't know how it's going to shake out, Frank. Do you think it's going to stay two tours? Like, you're going to have a merger of some sense as far as the players being able to cross over.
I don't know.
Are they going to still have a LIV tour and a PGA tour?
I don't know.
Both can play. Like, Scotty could play in a LIV tour event. Or I got to think the PGA guys are going, if your money's going to stay the same, yes, I'd be interested in playing
LIV
tour events. $4 million
They can't
first
do that.
Place.
They can't do that because then it's going to parallel tournaments. You know,
well, if it is parallel. But they'll have some exemptions like they do now. They can still, if they want, right? They've always been able to go play some European events. Tiger was notorious for playing in Dubai and different places when the regular tour was playing. He got some exemptions to do. That's, I think, what part of the negotiations is. If they're going to keep, and if the Saudi fund is saying, oh, no, we don't want the LIV Tour to go away and everything just become PGA Tour, if that's their stance and they want to do that and still create the money and all that kind of stuff, then I got to think there's going to be some way to say, but we want to be able to have at least a number of times have Scotty and Jordan and all these guys play in some live events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, they like playing in shorts.
You know, as much as I'd love to go down to Doral, we're on top of the Masters, so I really can't do that.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm going to do is reach out. You just put a bug in my ear. I'm going to reach out to Eric Trump, reach out to his office, and see if we can't get him to give us 5-10 minutes to talk about the live event at his golf course, which those are all come under his control. You know,
oh, there? Okay.
Yeah. So that's when I met him 2 years ago down at Doral when I went to the live event and spent time, sat there with him, talking to him. And well, let's try to get him on the show, Frank. Okay,
sure,
Frank,
that'd be great.
You do that. Yeah.
Smart guy.
And his wife is even smarter. Unbelievable.
Speaking of which, what about that little social happening involving the Trump family and golf? And by that, I mean
I don't want to go down that path.
It's not a path.
Everybody's raising hell about it and all that.
No, they're not.
So what?
They're just talking about
that's,
it. That,
you know what? That's Kai's mother. That's Kai's mother. And Kai plays golf with Charlie Woods. Okay?
Right.
They're
right.
Friends.
They go to school together.
So, and now, you know, mom and dad are buddies.
Yes.
So Tiger's smitten with her.
That's cool.
And I think that's great. I mean, I really, really do. I don't.
Yeah.
But all the people who are the naysayer, I just hate all that mess because, you know what? Love is something that's of God. It's not of man.
It becomes politics, right? And everybody wants to get goofy about that. But I think it's pretty interesting that the Trump's former, I guess, daughter-in-law.
Donald Trump Jr., yeah.
Tiger.
Trump's daughter-in-law, yeah.
Yeah, or getting to hang out. Well, so, it's a whole just another complex part of the – I tell you what, I mean, Tiger Woods' life story is one hell of a story, is it not?
Well, had a lot of different girlfriends.
Yes.
And
it just keeps spinning.
Almost as many as somebody I know.
it just keeps spinning. So,
yes,
yeah,
it does. But you know what? I wouldn't want to hurt her because that's still Kai's mom and President Trump loves his granddaughter Kai. I mean, just loves her because she's their golf buddies.
She's a very good golfer.
If I were Tiger, I'd tread very carefully in that situation.
I
would not hurt her feelings.
Yeah,
don't do it.
Will. Yeah,
you might have Cash Patel and Pam Bondi knocking on your front door like they did this morning, but in Virginia. Yeah. Anyway, no, that's. I wish them all the best. I want people to be happy.
Little TMZ part of our show.
It is the TMZ part of our show.
Telling everybody what's going on.
Anyway, so this week, the Texas Children's Houston Open
is
on the books. And they're, like you say, they're out there playing now. But Rory and all the boys are playing in this thing. They're getting ready for the Masters. And I can't wait because guess what?
What?
You know that I'm a brand ambassador for PXG. And guess who the official equipment sponsor of Golf Talk America Live from the Masters, the Live from Augusta show. Is PXG. So
are we sure you're going to be there? Or we're still
80%? I'll be it's 100%.
Definitely. Oh, 100%.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's we will be there. And we'll be with our friends from Azalea Hospitality, Marcus Brunell, our good buddy.
Yes.
And you got to see his collection of golf memorabilia, specifically tickets from the Masters. He's the owner of one of only two of the early tickets that everybody signed.
Oh,
he's got Bobby Jones signed it and everything.
Is that right?
Yeah. There are only two of those in the world. And I won't say what he paid for it, but I know, and it's a big number.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Did he just keep that in his back pocket, I guess?
Yeah, no.
He just sits on it? Yeah. It's all wrinkled and everything.
Pull this out. Hey, check this out, man. It's only worth a couple of million dollars, but here, look at this.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, cool stuff.
That's pretty cool. So, that's
yeah,
pretty cool.
It really is. I'm looking forward to seeing Marcus and his wife and family. And it's, you know, going to the Masters every year is an annual, for me, it's like old home week. You know, all of us get together, and all the broadcasters, you know, you've been there with us.
Yes.
And that we all get together with all of our friends from Golf Channel and SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, and we all, you know, snarl at each other, and they try to get us to buy drinks all the time, and we won't do it.
If you're an old-time season ticket holder,
yes.
Are there, am I mistaken or am I right about this, are, like somebody who's had it in the family, Masters tickets or pass, whatever, is it a medallion of some sort? As opposed to like a paper ticket, is there?
No, it's not a paper ticket. It's a badge. It's a badge.
It's not like a medallion. It's not like metal-ish. I'm not saying it's solid gold or something like that. But I kind of thought there was some Masters, like if you've been around since the 60s or whatever, and had
they have some things like that. But I'm not
something like that that gets passed down through the generation, almost like you keep it in a safe deposit box or something, right? It's like, don't lose.
No,
Dad's
but they still issue
medallion.
They issue a badge. It's not like the paper ticket that people wear.
Yeah, it's the one-day tickets passes that some people, regular fans, have. But that's okay. So the badges too, whatever they are, those badges get passed down. Like you can.
Well, no, they reissue those every year. They're reissued.
But what
are the
ones that people get in their family? Like your grandfather had it, and now it's still in the family. They have that, right?
Well, they do have that. They did. I mean, like my dad had it, but and I still have that stuff. So
no, but I'm saying, but don't they get to pass them down? Is my question. Don't.
Well,
if your dad wants to leave it to you in his will, you now have a pass to the Masters.
Absolutely.
Not just as a keepsake. It actually gets you into the Masters. Am I right on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's what they're strict on.
I misunderstood what you were asking. That's
what they're strict on, because some people misuse those and found that grandpa's badge is no longer because grandson or somebody gave it to a friend or somebody that wasn't supposed to be using it.
The name's on it, the picture.
They track that stuff. I mean,
they do.
Augusta National has a pretty good system of knowing who's doing what when.
Yeah, they do.
And you still can't take a phone in, right?
No.
It's so weird, because remember when cell phones first came out, you couldn't. And if you went to any normal PGA Tour event, they were like, you know, back 2005 or whatever. Oh no, put your phone. You can't have it's the worst thing in the world.
Well, when they first came out, you had the brick, you know, the Motorola brick.
Yeah. But they didn't want it ringing. They didn't want your distractions. They didn't want any of that stuff. Then they realized how valuable social media could be, of people taking pictures and saying, oh, look what a great time I'm having with my friends. And they're like,
yep.
And suddenly they're encouraging, no, bring it. Take your
phone. Not Augusta.
But Augusta never went down that road. They said, no.
Don't have to.
And you have to leave them, and they hold them for you. Right?
Well, they
everybody has one as you walk in the gate. Everybody has them on them, but they take them. And
most of the people go to hospitality houses, and a lot of the people do. People that don't know a lot of people don't know the rules, but no, huh?
Sure.
Purses can only be a certain size for women.
If you just walk up and
they'll take it away from you. Yeah. You got to go back over there and check it in at that building over there.
They've got like a little place to make sure they keep your phone, which they're very good about. Right? It's not like they're going to keep it, but they do not want you to have that.
Now, you can wear like an Apple Watch in there, but if they see you dinking on it and talking on it or texting on it, they'll come take that away from you.
And you'll disappear like the squirrels, Frank. That's what I like to say.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
You disappear like the squirrels. That should be your wear a t-shirt.
I'm not.
Where are the squirrels?
I'm not going to do that.
You go through a custom. Where are the squirrels? Suddenly you're going to have two big guys grab you by the elbows from behind going, sir, can you come with us, please?
Where did
you get this shirt? Could you please change your shirt?
I'm
just wondering, where are the squirrels?
I wouldn't get through security. I wouldn't get in with that t-shirt on. Number one, it doesn't have a collar. You better have a collared shirt. And there are no blue jeans allowed either.
But I will say this. And just so people are clear, if you're listening to our show, which millions and millions of people are doing,
they do,
and you want to go to Augusta, you can take your phone during practice rounds, because they do let people take pictures and things, because I have pictures of us and some of the people we were with during the practice rounds.
Yes.
You can do it. They'll let you take your – because then they're like, hey, it's fine. It's a practice round. There's a little bit looser rules, and we'll let you – take pictures, because they're still knowing that.
Now, if they see you talking on it, they'll come take it away from you.
Probably, I guess, but they're still, they know you want to share that with your friends, because for a lot of people, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and so they're cool about that. But once Thursday comes, it's different
it's
rules.
It's serious, It's very serious.
And
that's probably, and people have heard this, but you saw it for yourself, and I've known it for years, the most educated patrons are at Augusta. They know the game. They know the decorum. They know the rules.
Yeah.
And, So
just like the players. I mean, it's like they all know, and I don't mean this sacrilegiously, but they're on sacred ground, right? And it's like, okay, the players have the rules they have to go by, which locker rooms they can go into or not, the buildings they can't get into. Whereas they have access, if you're a player, to almost anything, anywhere when you go to a tournament. At Augusta, there's still restricted places that some people can't get to. So you got to know what you're doing.
Do you remember the writer Dan Jenkins?
Sure.
Yeah, Dan Jenkins, great guy. Knew him well.
Fort Worth native.
Yeah, Fort Worth. DC. Yeah, Dan Jenkins. Yeah. Great writer and humorist and all that. Well, he said, one of his quotes is, "Butler Cabin reminds me of a poorly lighted funeral parlor."
Yeah, probably.
I was like, Jim Nance.
See Jim Nance sitting in there doing it. He seems like he's one of those funeral directors. Doesn't he sit in
his
chair?
Is he the mortician? Is that what you're saying?
Doing the interviews? Hello, friends.
Hello, friends.
Thank you for coming to this.
Granny just died, but we don't have time to embalm.
We're here for a memorial for Frank. Frank was a great man, was he not?
Oh, God.
In his Jim Nance voice.
Which probably leads us to,
you want to take a break?
I don't want any of you people I'm going to instruct my wife.
Sure.
When I die, none of you guys are allowed.
Your funeral will be sponsored by Glenn Levitt.
It will be.
Yeah.
There'll be a morning.
There'll be a big Glenn Levitt sign behind Frank's coffin.
Total Wine in Nashville, Tennessee will go bankrupt. Anyway.
Welcome to Frank's Funeral, brought to you by Glenn Levitt.
Glenn Levitt.
12-year-old scotch.
Up next.
It's like,
remember the lectures we got about that when we first started with PGA Tour Radio? You don't say, after that, we'll be back after, up next,
Yeah.
Oh, that stuff, that was ridiculous. Anyway.
Very ridiculous.
I'm not going to go there. Your interview is up next, and
we have Tom Kite.
Yeah,
we have Tom Kite, as you said. We did it a little bit ago, 10 days ago or so, during the Players Championship. And he talks a bit about that and his thoughts on the Players and it's switching from season to season as it switched from back in the day when it was in the spring to more in the summer, back to the spring, and how proud he was to win it and how tough and challenging the Pete Dye course and how diabolical Pete Dye could be to some people with that course. So there was that. And then he gets into more of today's golf and Scotty and Tiger and all that. So it's very fascinating. Hall of Famer. He's 75 years old. Very, very on top of it and with it. And it was very interesting to sit down with Tom Kite. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, my interview with Hall of Famer Tom Kite. Enjoy.
All right, Tom, you won the Players in 89, back when it was March, before it got switched, and then back to March again.
Yep.
A lot of people, and I talked to Steve Elkington a few weeks ago about this, winning in March, playing in March, completely different tournament than when they were more in the summer. Is it a different tournament now, and playing in March more challenging than when they moved it to a calmer time of the year?
Well, there have been a couple of things that have really changed the way the Players' Championship is played, and a lot of it has to do with the time of year. Obviously, in March, you're going to get the winds. You're going to get the more unpredictable weather. A little later in the year, it's going to calm down a little bit, and so that's going to make the golf course play seemingly a little bit easier later in the year. But what ends up happening is that when we first played the tournament there, it was Florida. So they didn't oversee the golf course and weren't really trying to make it look pretty. It was a Pete Dye golf course, and anybody that knows Pete Dye and his style of architecture, he liked rustic stuff. He wanted it. He liked a lot of stuff that he saw when he went over to Scotland and Ireland and Britain, and a little bit of that is unkempt, it was kind of. He preferred that, and he really liked it. But eventually what ended up happening is they started selling green fees down at the Players Championship and to make the people feel like that they were really getting a lot of stuff, they had to have it green and they had to have it lush. And so they started overseeding the golf course. And what that does is it softens up the golf course. And you get the guys on tour now, well, even back then, when a person is playing well and you tell him, he has total control over the distance that it's going to go. He's not going to miss it more than 2 or 3 yards, one way or the other. But he had a bounce in there, you know, an unpredictable bounce. Then all of a sudden it becomes a little bit more problematic. You're trying to land it closer to the front edge of the green or just barely over the bunker because it's going to take a 20-foot bounce. And so when they started overseeding the golf course, it made it significantly softer and scores went down for that.
And it seems to be such a challenge for everybody. Obviously, Scotty last year, the first guy to win it 2 times in a row.
Right.
Jack's only won it 3 times. So you don't get a lot of repeat winners. It seems like it's an ultimate challenge for people to try to master that golf course. Part of it is the Pete Dye thing, which
right.
early on was criticized quite a bit, as you know. Now it's like Scheffler and the younger guys kind of love going there, and they love the challenge of the golf course. Yeah. Have you seen that evolution, too, of it being different
now? Well, you know, nowadays, you know, the players are able to separate themselves, but there's not a whole lot of difference in the way guys play now. They all hit it long, and the guys that hit it long and drive it straight, they're the ones that play well. And if you can control your irons, you play well. Back when I was playing, you know, there was a lot of difference in the game. There were some guys that were really long hitters you know, like a Davis Love or Freddie Couples or Jack, as you talked about. And then there were other players that were quite short, like a Fred Funk and a Calvin Pete. You know, and then you had more players that were, you know, kind of in the middle of the pack where I kind of fell. And you went down the list of winners at the TPC in Jacksonville, and you had everybody. You had guys that were bombers that could really play well. You had guys that were accurate off the tee that could really play well. And so you sat there and looked at the course and you said, you know, this course is really good because it doesn't favor anybody. It favors the guy that's playing the best that week. And so you had this cross-section of players, and it was you know, a cross-section of the whole tour. Yeah. You had short hitters that had a great week. You had long hitters that had a great week. You had average hitters. You had average putters that, you know, had a good week, and you had great putters that had a good week. So it was a wonderful golf course in that it didn't favor any particular style of play, just favored the guy that had the hot hand that week.
It's considered the fifth major, has been for a long, long time.
Should be a fifth.
Do you put it there? I mean, is it one of the crown jewels of your career, and is it for anybody that wins this tournament?
I mean, for me, you know, I went a long time before I won a major championship, and that was, you know, I had that nickname, the best player best player on tour that hasn't won a major championship, and then I always said, yet. You know, I always added yet to the question or to the comment. But, you know, I won the U.S. Open in 1992, but I won the Players in 89. So at that time, that was the biggest tournament that I had ever won. I had won on a lot of good golf courses and a lot of tough golf courses. You know, so I had a pretty nice resume, but winning the Players Championship on as difficult a golf course as it was back then. And you know, then following it up with a few tournaments at a few wins at some other good golf courses was pretty good.
Obviously, you're a Longhorn, so you're going to be a bit biased.
Big time.
Let's say Scotty and Jordan, both in this year's tournament, struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
And Jordan, I just kind of fell back a little bit more. But let's go to Scotty. Is Scotty, if you had to look back, and I know his career is far from being over, how good is he, and how good do you think he can be when it's all said and done and he's 50 years old?
Well, he's, you know, at every level, Scotty has won and dominated. I mean, he was a great junior player. He was terrific at the University of Texas, great amateur golfer all the way through, went on tour. You know, he kind of followed in Jordan's wake, if you will. Jordan's a couple years older, and obviously he had terrific success, both junior, amateur, and professional golf. So those two guys have made all of us so proud and doing some amazing things. But you look at Scotty right now, and I mean, he's got all the things that the great players have. He, you know, he drives it, you know, really, really well. He's long and he's straight for as long as he hits it. And then he just controls the flight of the ball. That's the thing that you know, I always strive for. If you could control the trajectory and the spin on your iron shots, then you could really play. And you know, I heard a great quote not too long ago. It was attributed to Nick Saban. He said, "You know, being great is not about doing great things a couple of times. It's about doing good things a lot." And you know, when I look at Scotty, and you know, I've heard comments from the players that are playing with him all the time. It's like, well, he doesn't do anything great, but he does a lot of things really good over and over and over and over, and he just doesn't make many mistakes.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody's 100% all the time, but Scotty gets there an awful lot.
You were known back in the day before anybody really got into that much physical fitness about being somebody who cared about that and watching your fitness while other guys were maybe at the bar or doing other things back in the day.
Yeah.
Certainly now it's a bigger part of it. So you know about that part of the game and what it meant to you, which brings us to Tiger and his fitness. We all knew about that.
Sure.
But people have said he just went too far, and here we see him again with an Achilles rupture and back on the bench, and who knows how long, if ever, he comes back. Would you agree that he pushed it too hard in that sense?
Well, you know, anytime you're at a very high level, as I was when I played, and certainly Tiger at a much higher level than I ever achieved, you know, anytime you do anything different, it can go one way or the other. You never make a change with the expectation that you're going to get worse. You're always trying to get better, and that's what, you know, pushes everybody, and you're always looking for that little edge. And so, you know, I'd be hesitant to say that, you know, without 2020 hindsight, that he overstepped it. But with 2020 hindsight and all these injuries that he's had, you'd say, well, you know, maybe some of the training that he did was counterproductive for longevity. You know, and it's a fine line. It really is. I mean, training is important, but you got to do it right.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're on the cutting edge, and you know, somebody comes up and they says, you know, if you'll do this, it will make you better. Well, you know, it's hard to kind of turn that down, but you know, with 2020 hindsight, you'd sit there and say, you know, Tiger, if you hadn't put on so much weight and maintained your flexibility and you know, maintained your speed. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is that he got bigger and stronger and got slower and lost distance.
Wasn't the plan.
No, that was not in the plan. So, you know, you'd have to say that was kind of counterproductive, and certainly all the injuries. You know, they may have happened with or without the training, but I think everybody, myself included, wishes he had had a little bit, you know, been able to play well right now. I mean, you know,
a lot of people thought he'd still be winning majors.
Yeah, no question.
By 50-ish.
You know, I won the U.S. Open when I was 43 years old, and Tiger was a way better player than I was, and, you know, in great shape and had, you know, more of a technician than I was, and you know, if I could win at 43 and you know, you sit there and see that Tiger should be winning in his late 40s and into his 50s. And of course, then you look at, you know, I think it was a little bit of a, I hate to say a fluke, but, you know, totally unexpected, you know, Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship at 50. You know, you'd think that, well, gosh, if Phil could do it, Tiger certainly should do it. But injuries have taken a lot of people down.
You've had a long career, a lot of perspective looking back. Is golf now, and combine this with PGA Tour, LIV Tour issues and what's going on there and how that may or may not, whenever, get resolved, it seems like it's become very top-heavy, right, where there's a lot of stars or a number of stars, and they're making the money, they're getting preferential treatment, if you will, and getting the signature events, and it's harder and harder, maybe, for newcomers or young guys or struggling people, injuries, to try to get... Has it always been that way? Was it like that when you played, or is it more and more that way, and that's a danger for professional golf?
It's always been that way. You know, when I went through the qualifying school way back in 1972, we had 22 spots, and there was one school a year, and there was no mini tour, there was no Corn Ferry tour, there was no European tour, was not much, Canadian tour didn't exist, Latin American tour didn't exist, all sorts of alternative places to go play professionally were not options. So if you didn't make it through the Q school, you were kind of back
home playing with your buddies,
back home sucking on your thumb. You know, it just kind of, you didn't know what to do, and you know, you'd work like crazy, and then the next year you'd go and you'd only have a few spots to do it. And of course, that only got you on tour. You know that allowed you to go on to Monday qualifying. You know, we were rabbits, and so you had to go through Monday qualifying to try to get into the tournament. And you hoped you made a cut, because if you made the cut, that exempted you into the next tournament. So, you know, it's never been easy, and it's always been top-heavy to some degree. But right now, with everything that's going on, you know, the tour trying to make sure that they don't have any more players defect and go to the rival, you know, they're really catering to the top players. And you know, it is unfortunate if you're trying to break onto the tour, because it's really hard. But some people will do it. You know, anytime I sit there and say, oh, there's no avenue to get to the tour right now, it's just, yes, there is. Because somebody will break into the thing, and there's always a little bit of turnover. You know, there's always guys getting older. You know, Tiger's not going to be a factor anymore. He's, you know, yeah, it hasn't been. So he's turning over, and there's going to be more and more people that are going to be doing that. And you just got to work hard and battle through it.
Make birdies.
You know, it's always been that way, and it comes down to just play better and do whatever you can. And of course, then there's that double-edged sword. You try everything you can to try to get better. And as we talked about some of the things, you know, if you're right at the top, there's only a couple of things that might help you. And there's a whole bunch of things that can bring you down. So you've got to be very careful and really protective of, you know, how you go about your process to get better.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Easy.
By the way, I did a PJ radio show with Paul Stankowski.
Yeah.
And so his big brag was, did you guys play together in the final mm-hmm. round? You were in the same group. You're right behind, or right ahead of Tiger. Is that it in 97?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys were both in the hunt. So that was kind of his, he goes, that was my glory of a major. He said, I get to look back and, or look forward, I guess, where was he?
Yeah.
Behind you?
Yeah.
And go, oh, look at that guy.
Yeah, no kidding.
And especially after that, what he opened with his 40.
Yeah.
Is that right? His front nine shot a 40.
Wow.
And he's, and some people, not you guys probably, and still knew,
no,
but some people are kind of going, oh, okay, is he all that? And he, what, shot 40, 30 or something?
40, 30.
Yeah.
I shot 77.
Did you?
The first round.
He must have come back a heck of a lot then, from then.
I was struggling. I think I shot 68 the next round, made the cut, barely. And then had a good weekend. So I played the last three rounds. But that first day was hard.
Just golf in general, I mean, it's hard. But, I've talked to Paul. I said, you watch these guys on the tour that, you know, shoot a 60, 61, and then come back with a 76. I go, how's that happen? I mean, it's less than 24 hours later. I go, how are you so in the groove? And then you shoot 15 shots. Or, I mean, it's not, I get it, you're going to shoot four or five worse. And he said, and so he tells his own story. He goes, yeah, whatever, New Orleans or somewhere. He goes, that's exactly what I did. He goes, I shot a 61, 77. And he said, and I'll be honest, I didn't feel much different the next day. He goes, putts weren't dropping like they were, but my swing felt okay. I really couldn't believe that I shot 16 shots worse.
Sometimes there's a final.
But it's like, that's golf, right? It's like, God. Right? He goes, yeah. I go, follow up 61 with a 63, you probably win, right? He goes,
he
can't do it.
Because
I was trying to, but he goes, it just hitting shots and I'd catch a branch or, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, one of the best examples of that I've ever heard of is when Al Geiberger won Memphis at Colonial, Colonial. That was a hard golf course with the old equipment. I mean, 7,200 yards.
Yeah, when he broke 60?
With the wooden clubs, he shot 59, and he won the tournament. He never shot in the 60s.
Is that right?
Shot
three rounds in the 70s.
Three rounds in the 70s and a 59. But he was.
That's gonna be hard to repeat, right?
No kidding. I mean, it was a hard golf course. I mean, golly. Really a hard golf
Can't
course.
Can't be many tournament winners.
And
so, how did this the 59? Just putts were going in.
Yeah,
I mean, just.
Yeah, just hit it.
What's your best on tour?
61.
61.
I shot 361.
Was a 59 in your thoughts in the back nine?
Not really.
Eagles, making a few eagles.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, hole out of 5 iron in the last hole, you might shoot 59.
5 iron, that could happen.
And nobody hits 5 irons anymore. They don't even know what those are.
Well, I was reading that didn't in 89 didn't you hit a 210? You hit a 5 wood or something on 16.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. Which I'm sure is awesome, but I'm just saying, 210 now, they're hitting a 7-iron.
Yeah.
They're not pulling out of wood.
I heard it.
It'd fly everything.
There was a stat that blew me away when DJ was still on tour. He said he went it was almost 2 years. It wasn't quite 2 years, but over a year and a half. And the most club he ever hit into a par 4 was a 7-iron. And he only hit one of those.
Is that right?
Everything else was 8-9 wedge.
Yeah, and they're playing 480, 490, 500
well,
yard par
fours.
Well,
I mean, you think about it. Yeah, but see, you know, I mean, we played, you know, 7,000 yard golf courses back then, and at that time, Jack was, if not the longest, certainly among the longest, and he was averaging 280. Most everybody is averaging 265 to 270. You had a few guys like Calvin and Fred Funk that were in the 250s. But, you know, they were – Jack was 280. Well, now the longest is 330.
Yeah.
So that's 50 yards on a tee shot. And then you figure if it's 50 yards on a tee shot, got to be able to pick up, you know, 20 or 25 on your second.
Right.
So – but if you just said 50 yards a hole – you know, and times 18,
18
that's
holes.
That's 900 yards.
Yeah, from 6,900.
And you add that to 7,000. They ought to be playing, seriously, they ought to be playing 80, to play the same golf course that we did, pre 2000. I mean, we had Metalwoods pre 2000, but 2000 is when the Pro V1 came out. So to play the same golf course that we played in the 1990s, 1980s, 1970s, they need to be playing 8,300, 8,400 yard golf courses to play the same golf course that we play. And they play, you know, 7,600, which seems long.
Yeah.
Except they're hitting wedge.
Right.
So how tough can it be? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's
just like me.
That's the truth.
Just like me.
They're playing par 68 because every par 5 is reachable.
Yeah.
I mean, when we designed Liberty National, you know, Bob Cups and my goal was to have one par 5 that everybody could reach, one that a few people could reach, one that a couple guys might reach it, and then one that nobody could reach.
Right.
And now everybody reaches them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's,
and they all go for it too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a.
But
isn't it a different attitude too? I mean, it seems like
a 640 yard hole, and you know, I don't think if he's long. And Jordan Spieth gets there in two.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like what?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a mentality too. In the last 25 years, and maybe Tiger brought a lot of that on, of the aggressiveness too.
Yeah.
It's like they lay up, and almost the announcers are going, "Oh, I mean, like tin cup."
And
no,
surprise.
And
the pros laying up like they're not supposed to ever lay up.
Well,
right? You got to go for it.
Well, you know,
it's
funny when you talk about Scotty because everybody talks about how aggressive he is off the tee, and then he plays conservatively into the green so he doesn't make mistakes. And you know, he came about that, and a lot of the guys are kind of catching on. They got all these analytical guys that are coming up with, you know, all the analytics of how they should play the golf course. Hell, we had to figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, I figured out if I short-sighted myself, I was going to make bogey.
You didn't have a laptop?
Didn't even have that. Had nothing.
Barely had a lap.
Yeah.
Much less a top.
No kidding.
It was very nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet
you. Yeah, nice to see you. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
You bet.
By the way, tell Stenko, my main job is on PGA Tour Champions, so tell
Stenko
I said hello.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Talk to him. He's one of the
So you're out on the tour most of, a lot again?
I don't travel a ton. I oversee the comms for them, and my team kind of travels more than I do, but I'm probably out to like 6-7 events a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's loving it. I mean, he took off for a long time. Like,
yeah.
He was like when in that group that you kind of, Paul Stankowski.
Oh, okay.
You're kind of done at 44. Like, he had some injuries, and he couldn't. He's like, I'm not going to make it to 50. So he got into another part of the business with making belts and golf apparel and everything. So he did that, but then he goes, well, now I'm 50, and I kind of want to. So he got back into it, and now he's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Make some cuts, and he lost that tournament a few weeks ago. Was it the Kohler Guard, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one Justin won.
Chubb.
But, you know, he got like a tie for fourth. This place is amazing. Again, thank you for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, I got your contact. We'll talk maybe about the Champions Center.
Yeah, can you show me
the PR you do for that?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything champs, you can show.
Okay, yeah, we'd love
to.
In search of magic.
Well, there you go, Tim. Great
that
job.
Was nice.
Great job.
Yeah.
Great job.
He really is a very thoughtful. His wife was there. Thoughtful guy, and it was a lot of fun.
Super nice person.
I think I've met him before, but it had been years and years ago. And he's still in great shape. You know, he talked about fitness was a big thing for him back in the day when he was playing in his prime in the 80s. Let's be honest, a lot of golfers were not that worried about conditioning. Right? I mean, they were kind of like, okay, whatever. My waist is what it is, like it or not. But he was into fitness, and he said, you know, I've got to, because he knew in his mind, he goes, I was not the biggest of guys. I'm, you know, 5'8", 5'9", 160 pounds. So he wanted to be fit. And so he kind of relayed that or understood that part of Tiger. But obviously, you know, Tiger took it a little bit too far in his estimation and most people's estimation that, you know, caused a lot of the. But anyway, back to the my friends
jumping out of airplanes and all that kind of crap.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, doing the paratrooper stuff. You know, and I think that's the in his final years, Tiger will seriously regret. Because in all honesty, Frank, would you not have expected him to be somewhere in the 25 major range?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If you go back to when he was 34 years old,
well, changed his swing how many times?
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
that's where he was, and when he was with Haney, he won. I think. Did he win 10 majors, 10 of his 15, I think, with Haney, something like that? It's like things were rolling. Things were going good. And but there was just, you know, other issues that were in play, part of which were also his need in his mind to be stronger, fitter. And people talked about how and even Haney did in his book, right, that he'd lift weights and work out, go play 18 holes, come back, run 5 miles, do more weights. Be like, God, what are you doing? Right, you're a golfer. You're not a linebacker, but he kind of had that pride thing. And even Haney's book, I know we're getting off on a Tiger here, but Haney's book, Tiger did very seriously his waist size, and he did not. And I think Tiger's generally, I think 6'2". What do you think he weighed? 210, somewhere in there.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that.
He wanted a 30-inch waist, a 31-inch, which was kind of almost impossible to have, right? When you're that size.
What is yours?
I'm a 32.
You're 32.
Yeah, I'm a very trim.
I'm 36.
Trim guy.
Yeah. But I'm taller.
But I'm also not. But I'm not. I'm also not. You know, 6'2", 210.
Yeah, I'm 6'3", right? And 219.
Yeah, and so for Tiger to do that was almost impossible. But that's what he. By God, I'm not going to have a 34-inch waist. And so that, and I'm using the word paranoia, but that kind of, you know, took over for him. He's like, oh, well, Tiger, be whatever waist you're going to be. Just keep playing like you play and win tournaments. Who cares? But he cared. And it was like a big deal for him. So anyway, and I saw pictures of him recently. He's still kind of looking big, isn't he, Frank?
Yeah, he does. He still looks like a linebacker.
Upper body. Yeah. Upper body. He's still.
Well, he has bird legs like I do. My legs, everything below, I look like out of bounds steaks below my knees.
Yeah.
And then the shorts have gotten shorter for people. You know, the style now is a little short, which I don't like.
You like the long ones down to your ankles?
I like the basketball shorts. Yeah,
covering. You look like
covering my bird legs.
Basketball team.
I like them down to my knees, but
yeah.
But you can't. Those are hard to find anymore.
I like the short shorts, Frank. I like.
Well, you're real athletic too.
I look like Larry Bird. I wear those shorts.
You don't look like you're better looking than Larry Bird.
No, you know what I'm saying?
Don't be hard on yourself.
Those basketball shorts back in the Celtics Lakers days, remember that? Magic
yeah,
Johnson.
Those
I shorts had to be, they were like 3 inches. That's all they were, 3 inches.
Those short shorts? Yeah.
Oh, they were so far up above my knees. God. It was those funny. Were, well, and then it just went the other extreme.
You have a problem with something low falling out, don't you? I mean,
yeah. There you go.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Speaking of taking golf lessons in cold weather, we still have that clip. From a previous show that I smarted off about. But anyway,
we
can't play that. Anyway, I'm looking forward to watching a little bit of the Houston Open. I'm looking more forward to going out to my country club today.
Which one is it?
Well, this club is Bluegrass Yacht and Country Club out in Hendersonville,
nice
Tennessee.
Place.
It's a gorgeous
place.
Guess who owns it? Guess who runs it? Whatever.
Who?
Owns it? Invited. Our presenting sponsor, Invited Clubs. Absolutely. Yeah.
Invited Clubs is the place to go. If you want to look at any club anywhere in the country, that's an Invited Club. And there's every part of the country is going to be covered by Invited Clubs. And just go to their website. Go to invitedclubs.com. And you can see exactly, put in your state, your zip code. It'll say, okay, here's where you are. And you happen to be in Florida. You happen to be in Idaho or Illinois or wherever. You can find a club and go check them out. And when you are a member at one, you get privileges at clubs all over the country, which is a great thing for you when you travel and get around. And they also have dinner clubs. Right?
Yes,
so some of them are golf club, but some of them, the one here, the Tower Club in Dallas, is 48 stories high in downtown Dallas. And it is gorgeous with unbelievable views. And it's all part of Invited. So all those perks come with it. Go to invitedclubs.com and you'll know more.
Is the guest room ready for me to come to Dallas, Tim?
Oh, is it, Frank?
All Jeez. Right. Got it all fixed up.
Got the disco ball spinning.
Good.
Just like you like.
And you do have the bar stocked. Well, I hope.
The bar is always stocked. Yes.
the bar is always full.
Always.
Until Frank comes to town.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I want to get out to Dallas and we'll go to the Tower Club. That'd be fun. Then go play your club.
Nice place.
We'll go play some
I'm at Prestonwood, where I played yesterday. Prestonwood Golf Club is a beautiful golf club, too. All part of Invited World. And PXG, also a proud sponsor
of
Golf
Big
Talk
time.
America.
Big
And your equipment that you're playing, you're one of their ambassadors.
Yes.
And you wear their clothes, you play their clubs, you get new golf balls, you're playing their golf balls, which are great golf balls.
Those are great golf balls, man. I'm telling you.
But they really are. They're their version of the high-end golf ball that a lot of people know about. If you haven't tried PXG's version, you should, because I believe they're also a little bit cheaper. Are they not, Frank?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, they are a little bit
cheaper.
So you
save a little bit of money, and they're...
Like Pro V's are like $55 a dozen now, and I think you can get 39 on the PXGs.
There you go.
And they have the same thing as a Pro V1 and a Pro V1X.
Yeah.
So, and I play...
There you go.
I mix them up and play them and absolutely love them, but even more than that, I'll tell you, that new Allen putter that they have... They have two really hot products. The mini driver, which is basically a two wood that you can hit off the ground. It's hot. And the Allen putter, go to golftalkamerica.com and go to the episodes and look. I have one of the principal designers on there talking about the philosophy of the Allen putter, how it was made and what it competes against. It's really interesting. So, you know, that's not a shameless plug. It's just a plug because I'm telling you, it's the best putter I've ever used.
Yeah.
I really like it. So,
well, and you're not alone. I mean, there's a lot of guys on all the tours playing PXG and, my good friend, Gary Player.
Yeah.
Is a PXG ambassador. He's not quite in your level, Frank, of
ambassadorship,
but he hopes to be one day.
Yeah. I think they pay him more than they pay me.
I'm looking at a picture of Gary Player right now, as a matter of fact, right there in my office. And he's a PXG guy.
Yeah,
he wears the hat, plays with the PXG ball. He gave me a sleeve. He goes, Tim, his South African accent. Tim, you must play these PXGs. Try the PXGs. They're very good golf balls.
Yeah, they really are.
Mr. Player, I will be happy to play whatever you ask me to play.
Exactly, yeah.
And I hit it right into the woods. No, I didn't.
Right in the water hazard, first shot.
You're a horrible golfer. I don't know why I gave you those balls.
Go get that ball. Go find that thing.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap things up. We got some music to play?
No, we're not playing
music.
Let's get out of this somehow.
Get out with our lives still intact.
I'm going
Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is the greatest podcast in history. Tell all your friends to listen to Golf Talk America. It's expanding. We're all over the globe, and we talk about a lot of things.
Australia.
It's even golf-related. But we do appreciate you listening. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Please remember to join us next time right here for Golf Talk America.